Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Trainer of Champions. We have a very special guest coming on later on today. But further ado, we'd like to welcome our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, onto the show. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Good to hear you. Hey, I want to say happy Hanukkah to everybody out there, too. It's the season, so best wishes. But, yeah, we got a lot of things to talk about today.
Well,
what's
going on in boxing? There's been some ups and downs and swings this way, that way in negotiations with the in that great heavyweight division. It looks like Horn's going to be in there. Give us the full boxing report, Bob. What we got going on?
Okay, well, the big fight tonight, now the season's slowing down here as far as a lot of the big professional fights. We're going to see over the next couple of weeks a lot of the Golden Gloves tournaments are happening all over the country. Also some youth tournaments with the kids that are just like 8 years old, 10 years old. So those are kind of what take over the holidays through now to the end of the year. But we do have a big one tonight up in Laval, Quebec. It's undefeated WBO World Middleweight Champion Billy Joe Saunders, 25-0 with 12 knockouts. And he came in with 160-pound weight, so he's down a little bit, looks a little trimmer. He's taking on former IBF world champ David Lemieux, total record 38-3 with 33 knockouts. It's a 12-round championship bout. Also, the undercard features a 10-round battle of middleweights. You have Antoine Douglas going against Gary Spike O'Sullivan. Also, a great 10-round battle of junior welterweights. Cletus, he's undefeated. Cletus the Hebrew Hammer Seldon. Eric, the good guy to fight on a Hanukkah night. The Hebrew Hammer, 21-0, 17 knockouts, going against Ives Ulysses Jr., 14-1, 9 KOs. Also, Ryan Garcia taking on Noe Martinez in an 8-round fight between junior lightweights. That's up there tonight. Good night of fighting with Billy Joe Saunders, of course. He's the undefeated one. He's got the WBO belt, and he's waiting to see what happens with the Triple G, Canelo, and all the other stuff going on in the middleweight division, which we'll see probably shake all out in 2018, but has to get by the former champ tonight. Also in Germany, IBF International Heavyweight champ Alexander Dimitrenko, 40-3, takes on undefeated Miljan Rukanen, 18-0 in Hamburg. That's Friday night, the 22nd. Rukanen replaces Adnan Retzovic, who withdrew with an arm injury. Also, the fight in Weissenfels, Germany, scheduled for tonight between EBU light heavyweight champ Karol Murat and Dominic Bossel has been put off since Bossel withdrew with an injury sustained in his training. Also, no new date has been set, but a bout with mandatory challenger Sherwai Demchenko could happen early next year. And also, you mentioned about Jeff Horn winning there the other night via the TKO down under on Wednesday. And then Wednesday night, we had a very good night of fighting over there in England, kind of piggybacked with the Horn fight. And that was Katie Taylor. She's now 8-0, the Irish pride. She's 8-0 as a pro after the big successful amateur career. And she successfully defended her WBA World Lightweight title with a unanimous points victory over the American Jessica McCaskill out of Chicago. And now she's looking to, quote, unify the division. She's now ranked number two. Eddie Hearn, he confirmed talks for Taylor, the IBF champ Victoria Bustos, ranked number three. She's Argentine. They're going to meet early 18th in Dublin. So that sounds great. But the big dog in the division is WBC champ Delphine Pearsoon of Belgium. She's 39-1. The only loss she suffered was way back in 2010. Also now in the mix, though, Chantel Cameron, she's number four. She's out of the UK. She's the new IBO champ, just winning the title this past week. Total pro record 5-0. And we might as well mention, too, just because it will fill out, Johanna Belen Alfonso of Argentina is the WBO champ, 16-2. But it looks like she might just get that that thing happening with unifying the division, taking on the IBF champ, and she'll probably end up taking on Cameron if she's successful there for the IBO. So she can actually take three of them. But again, it's all Pearsoon's division. So,
how you feeling, honey?
What do you think about the fact that you actually had somebody who came out and headlined an actor? Got something else happening here.
Our guest, you have to hold on. We know you're online, but you have to be quiet till we get you on there.
Okay.
Hold on.
No problem.
We love it.
We can hear you loud and clear. You're online. You're on the queue. So just hold on.
Yeah, I'll tag it. I'll tag you on this.
Great.
You just have to be quiet. You can listen to the Fox News. You're
on. Shout out
all
to
right.
you.
Come on. What do
and
we got?
I'm also watching Ted, and
hey, Aaron,
if I don't see Hoyle, he'll have a fit. You know, Freddie.
He's been... I'm looking forward to the distance of
I know. Get some aspirin.
Okay,
on.
Yeah, we hear. Just hold on. Hold
oh,
the
will.
Queue.
He's on the radio.
Yeah, we can hear you talking on the line, though. Just hold the queue.
Perfect.
You have to be quiet because
you're really feel better. Love you, baby.
Okay.
I love you, too.
Right,
bye-bye.
Come on.
Come on. Bye.
Hello.
Okay. Yes. All right, Aaron. Yeah. All right. We love it.
Fight over there, the women's fight overseas that happened in Ireland. Go ahead with that, Bob.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. That was, Katie Taylor. She successfully defended the WBA World Lightweight title. And she's looking to unify the division. Eddie Hearn's talking with IBF champ Tori Bustos out of Argentina to fight Taylor sometime early 18 in Dublin. And then there's the Chantel Cameron. She's coming up, too, out of the U.K., and she's the IBO champ, so those fights could actually happen. But we're also saying the big one in the division is WBC champ Delphine Pearson. She's out of Belgium, 39-1, the only loss back in 2010. And I just wondered what your feelings were. I mean, this is a woman who obviously getting a name for herself. She was a headline bout. That doesn't happen too often, does it, Aaron, where a woman fight is the headliner?
No, it doesn't, Bob. You know, Shields here in the United States, who was an Olympic medalist, you know, they're making a big go about her fighting and having an opportunity just to fight on TV and then the headline a card. But, however, that's huge for women now to, you know, these pioneer women. You know, Christy Martin had to be the caboose to a lot of great big undercards with Mike Tyson, Julio Cesar Chavez, and however, these young ladies are now, the networks see the value in women's boxing and that women are out there trying to do the same thing as men, bringing great fights, great entertainment. And I like to see Shields and her fight on the same card, one of those huge cards. Maybe they can hook it up over there when Wilder and them get together with Anthony Joshua. Hearns put that deal together, have them fight on there. And we're really up boost women's boxing around the world, Bob. It's all coming together.
Yeah, Shields, Clarissa Shields, she's like the 168-pounder, kind of like the super middleweight, and Taylor is the lightweight. But, yeah, those two big names are really making the names for themselves. And just the way, you know, we got Eddie Hearn there talking for Taylor, too. So, you know, things are going to happen. He had her on that last Joshua fight. That's where she won the title. And she fought again, so she wants to fight a lot, you know, too. So she's keeping her name out there, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, speaking of the ratings, too, that Lomachenko-Rigondo fight on ESPN last week scored a 1.5 market rating. It was the second-highest-rated boxing event on cable for 2017. And the HBO also had the card on that night, too, from the Mandalay Bay Event Center in Vegas. And they didn't score as high a rating as ESPN did. But Mickey Roman scored a ninth-round TKO over four-time world champ Orlando Cirri Salido, and that marked the end of Salido's career. He retires with a record of 44-14-4, 31 KOs, and I really do think he's retiring. He's done. Anyway, we got a lot of news there happening already, though, coming out of the heavyweight division. Here we go. Oh, my heavens, we have Tyson Fury. Now he's cleared the fight. Now, he's talking about doing Dillian Whyte coming up. That's Eddie Hearn again. They want him and then possibly Ballou if he beats Hay on May 5th. And that May 5th, 2018, is shaping up to be a big night of boxing. There's a lot of talk about a lot of different fights. Of course, we'll get to that as we get to it. But that fight, Ballou-Hay, is on May 5th. And then he's saying, well, he wants to take on Joshua if he beats them two. But then he's also saying he wants over half. He wants the bigger cut. So that's what's coming out of Fury's camp this week. And now we got the whole Joshua Parker thing looks like a done deal, which kind of leaves Ortiz fighting Wilder. So that's the latest that I got.
Hey,
and a lot of other things happening there.
Well, Povetkin just fought over in Russia, too. He just fought last night, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, Christian Hammer, yeah.
Yeah, and what he did, he scored a 12-round unanimous decision. So he's back in the picture, Povetkin over there. The heavyweight division is very well coming around with all these heavyweights now being cleared of different problems they had with steroids and things like that. Now they're testing clear. That's great for the sport of boxing. When the heavyweight division's active, boxing grows at alarming rate. And you can tell it's growing, Bob, with top-ranking the Hall of Fame boxing promoter Bob Arum promoting a show like he did on ESPN, where he has an extended contract. It did two million 114,000 viewers on ESPN. They went head-to-head. Remember last week we were talking about HBO, and they were talking about this and that. A guy shouldn't go head-to-head.
They won.
Will always rise up to the top with free television and all of that. I think it's good when competition's a good thing, Bob. And so it shows people love boxing. They love a good fight. And when it's promoted right, like Bob Arum's doing with these weekly shows on ESPN, boxing is taken back on. And guess what? Horn, the replay of the Horn fight that he just won, who beat Pacquiao, he's back on ESPN. They're going to be showing his fight that he had down under that he won with 11th round TKO. And
Austin, that was actually live at 6:30. It had nice numbers for a Wednesday morning, East Coast, 6:30 in the morning. It had nice numbers. I don't have the total in front of me, but I know ESPN was happy with the numbers. But, yeah, they are showing it again, more like a primetime thing. But that got numbers at 6:30 in the morning. That tells you something, too.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. And not only that, with Horn and Teddy Atlas, the comments that he made during the Horn and Pacquiao fight about Horn getting in a numerous amount of other times, ESPN has relieved him of his commentating duties on ESPN. And I think that's a good thing. Here's why. How can a guy with a network paying you the dollars that they're paying you get up and kick not only the networks in the butt, also the fighters in the butt that's helped you get your paycheck that you're getting there commentating? All we ask for fair, impartial things on the telecast, bring the truth and bring the knowledge of the truth together, which many times he lied in the outbashing that he had with Mike Tyson, including myself. The lies that he told on me, I never trained nobody, I never did this, I never did that. A constant beat of ESPN finally woke up and said enough is enough. And I think ESPN boxing now will take off in the way with free television the way it is. Bob Arum's a genius.
That's beautiful. Yes. Yeah, I think Bob Arum is still, man, he's got a lot of life left there, man. He's been doing it for a long time. He is really at the top of his game. And, he's still pushing to get Pacquiao in there somewhere.
Not a Hall of Famer, so we know that he's there. So
we also wanted to jump in there, too, with we're looking now at a Horn Crawford fight coming up, too. That's like the one that we have our eyes set on, too. That ought to be one wild matchup, too.
Well,
Crawford moving up.
Yeah, Bob, without a doubt, Terrence Crawford, is pound for pound the best fighter in the world today. He doesn't have a name like this. And when you mention pound for pound, Bob, you're talking about a guy, if he goes up to heavyweight and fights, he could beat a Joshua, something like Billy Kahn did when he fought Joe Lewis. He was winning the whole fight until he got cocky and tried to knock Joe out, and Joe put the hammer down on him late. So it can happen, and that's what pound for pound means. But without further ado, Bob, we'd like to thank the people for...
This is a way to get the cue, too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
For the World Boxing Review Radio Show. And without further ado, our guest, the Imperial Butterfly, thank you for tuning in. How you doing?
I'm doing just great. The Imperial Butterfly has flown into the studio. I'm with you.
Well, welcome here anytime. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, we thank you
that's
for coming
wonderful.
On. We knew that the Imperial Butterfly was on because we could hear you. And, you know, with this, with the studio, when you're on cue, the mics are very sensitive. That's why we asked people to be quiet because you were talking in the background. It was drowning Bob out with the great box of news.
Oh,
but you're
no. I didn't realize. I'm thinking I'm sitting I'm sitting somehow like in a queue, and I was actually on the phone with the Ireland's own boxing historian, Amo Klein, to remind him that I'm on the air.
That's all good.
It's all good. With a professional combatant boxing coach, the Imperial Butterfly, with being an author and a chaplain, a fight chaplain, just give us some insight of what you do and where you do these things at. Give us some background about you, because you can explain it better than us. The Imperial Butterfly.
Well, you know, I have a tremendously large amount of experience over, decades of body dynamic. You know, I've designed different wellness programs for large healthcare organizations and developed rehab programs. I have a background in conditioning people. I mean, you know, a gold medalist, East German gold medalist for the German Olympics and things like that. So because I love boxing so much, and I love MMA as well, I started writing a column probably back in, was about 2009 or 8, I want to say, because at that time I was working with people training in MMA, and I would get them ready to go for the tournaments and all that stuff if they were having, if they'd had an arm bar that kind of torqued the elbow out, or if their neck was sore, you know, from having a rear naked choke or that kind of thing. And so I started writing a column for the MMA Fight Council, which is still archived on their site, and I would write off the mat. In other words, whatever was happening on the mat that week is what I would write about, and I would put it kind of in a storyline to make it more interesting. So I had a sports column for about a year. When that was finished, I put it all those, what I call the 49 redemptive applications of self-care, and I put it into a book. And, of course, I had met Jackie Atkins at one of the sports expos where I was one of the featured seminar leaders because I had been on television teaching yoga years ago. And so Jackie and I made an immediate connection, and at some point we reconnected, and I started – I think it was because it was my dad's birthday, and so I had gone up to Gleason's to do kind of like a birthday clinic for everybody in the gym. And then we decided that I would stay and be there every Tuesday night to see who needed what fixed, whether it was knees or elbows or shoulders or whatever. And that then led me to being on the staff of Ms. Downing Promotions so that I go out to the pro fights and see the fighters before they go out to the ring just to make sure that they're tip-top.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's kind
now,
of what my function
Jackie, she's a wonderful person. You know, she's a veteran with the Navy and the military, a former fighter, trainer, and all of that. What a wonderful person she is. Very knowledgeable about boxing. And
she's the queen diva. I call her the golden lady of light for boxing because she's always full of light. She's always helpful. You can count on Jackie, and she's just a wonderful person. I've known her a very long time, but we had a gap there because she's been so busy, you know, putting the new the Gleason's Gym Jersey Shore together. So that's where I am. I'm at Gleason's Gym Jersey Shore on Tuesday evenings on the floor doing my job, and part of my job is to observe how people are moving in the ring because the other coaches are looking at their timing or their jab or their technique or their combinations, or the other coaches are conditioning them. And what I'm doing is the self-care portion. I'm working with if they have knots in their arms or they have knots in their calves, or what are they doing at work when they're not training for boxing that is affecting their ability and throwing off their timing. And I also take care of the coaches. You know,
looked up there, a great friend of mine in Gleason's gym, Hector Roca. Me and Hector been friends for a long, long time, and what a guy. Yeah. And what
you're talking
strength.
About New York? New York Gleason's up at Bruce's?
Me and Hector Roca, we've been friends for a long time, and he just won that big award with Ring 8.
Mm-hmm.
He did with Henry Haskopf. You know, he was telling us about the award he just won with Ring 8. So you're
mm-hmm.
with a fine of people in Gleason's gym. And Gleason's gym, my God, does that have the history behind it and his name.
Well,
so
you know.
They bring the person in with themselves. So where did you get this name, the Imperial Butterfly? Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. It started off 25 years ago when I was taking up Kung Fu training. I was taking up Northern
mm-hmm.
Shaolin. And I have very strong feet and very strong arms from having done yoga for so many years. And I'm talking old-fashioned traditional yoga, not this other stuff, whatever this other stuff is. And so at the time, I was the only female in the school, and I was actually the first female in that school, in that system, to ever get a black belt after 8.5 years it took me. Anyway, so when it was my turn to work out with my training brothers, and we had to throw kicks and do blocking and kicking drills, they'd be like, "What? You're not supposed to, we're not allowed to wear any steel-tipped shoes in here." And I said, "I don't have steel-tipped shoes on. These are $5 KED sneakers. What are you talking about?" And they said, "We don't want to come in contact with your feet. You're like made of iron." So they started calling me the Iron Maiden because even my forearms mm-hmm. are like steel bars. So they said, "We don't come in contact with her. She's the Iron Maiden." And then somewhere around 2000, 2001, I took a class on the steel fan, which is like a Tai Chi fan, but it's about a pound or two of steel, and you have to learn how to use it for self-defense. And I took that with a very nice grandmaster, and I fell madly in love with this steel fan, and I created my own training form, and I started taking it around to all of the tournaments. I did the tournament circuit for a while. And so because of the fan, I became known as the Iron Butterfly. But then, after that, other people, because I also had a ninjutsu mentor, and he decided that I deserved my own sub-clan, and he gave me the clan of the Imperial Butterfly. So that's where that comes from. That and, you know, I have an ego that is tough to. I try to be humble, but in all reality, it's hard to fit my head through the door sometimes. I have to remember to be humble and gracious and kind and all that stuff. But so anyway, that's the whole Imperial Butter, and it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun with that when I put up something on. You know, I have my Facebook column now called The Sweet Science, and I love to put pictures up that say, "The Imperial Butterfly has spoken." So I like to have fun with it. You know, I'm all about, and you know, I'm all about media. So, excuse me. So I can't help but just have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Well, hey, Bob, do you got any questions for the Imperial Butterfly?
Well, just kind of bring back what we were talking about earlier with the Katie Taylor fight this past Wednesday over in England, where she was a headliner. How do you feel about that. I know we were talking about it's really a rare thing, but I think this is a great sign for 2018 with some of the women fighters. We also talked about Clarissa Shields over here in the States, but would you see like women's boxing going next year? I think it's very, very promising.
I wish I could comment on that, but unfortunately I can't. And my experience, even at the gym, is that I've been there 2 years on the floor, and we have women that are training in boxing, but it's always the men that come over that are, they really, and I don't know why that is. I don't want to speculate and say that they train harder than the women. That would be ridiculous. But I get phone calls from all over the place, all over the world. I had Rude Boy McCabe call me all the way from, I think he's in UK, because he thought he had a torn deltoid muscle, which I had to fix over the phone. So this is how my life is. I have people that call me from all over the place, and 99.9% of the time, it's men that call me. Another one who I'd love to shout out to because he's battling cancer right now is Sugar Ray Holden. Now, Sugar Ray Holden has been the sparring partner of some really great names out there, and he'll call me, you know, if his lower back or he's sore or something. So I get calls from all over the place from boxers who, you know, are not sure did I tear my hamstring or that kind of thing. And it's never the women. I never get calls from women. So only this past year have I actually worked with two women at the gym. 99.9% of the time, the people that I'm helping are all male.
Yeah,
isn't that funny?
So
it's a funny thing, right?
What you're doing is like this here. It's more or less in sports medicine. When guys just say doing road work, okay, and their one side of their leg starts to get sore, and you know, can't nobody figure out that I didn't bump my leg. You know, I'm not running
that's
real
my job.
Long distance, anything like that. Sometimes it may be the sneaker that he's wearing. Sometimes
the
guy's running on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
One part of his body, one top of the where the gully's at, is lower than the street
mm-hmm.
level.
Right.
And those are the things what you're saying you're analyzing that no one else can find the reason why this problem keeps happening to the person, whether it be him sparring, him doing road work, him exercising, or him sparring.
That's
when
correct.
There's no answer why this guy keeps feeling like that, they come to you.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And you know, little things like, somebody will come to me, like let's say we're having a pro fight, and I discover that one of the pro fighters can't turn his head all the way because he has a crick in his neck. You can't go in the ring in a pro fight, any fight really, with a crick in your neck. So here it is, it's, you know, 40 minutes before he's getting in the ring, he's the main event. I've got to make sure that that neck is okay. Because if you can't
mm-hmm.
turn your head, how are you going to, you can't dodge an incoming punch or a jab or anything effectively. So these are the things that I want to make sure don't happen. You know, and hopefully I get to work with people while they're in training pre-fight. So if whether it's amateur, or, you know, I'm registered with USA Boxing. So, you know, I see most of the time I'm seeing amateur fighters. But it's my job. And I, by the way, I think of myself as the outside of the ring cut man because I don't deal with cuts and abrasions. I deal with the bigger, you know, the muscles and body alignment and that kind of thing. So I think of myself as the outside of the ring cut man because other people don't understand what I'm actually doing.
Yeah, well, the Imperial Butterfly, you got 30 seconds in closing. What do you want to say? Because we have our historian waiting in the queue.
I just want to do a shout out to a couple of people because, you know, they're my buddies. First of all, of course, Emil Klein, the blue-collar cat from Dublin, how can I not call out to him? Ted Dineen in Cork, Ireland, and Freddie Hoyle, straight out of Jackson, Tennessee. If I don't shout out to Freddie, he'll never forgive me. And, of course, Sugar Ray Holden. And I want to thank you and Bob for having me on the show. I've had such a great time.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show. The Imperial Butterfly, thank you so much for coming on this show, and we look forward to having you back on again. Time goes so fast, Imperial Butterfly. So we have waiting on the queue our boxing historian, Tony Trim, who's doing James Braddock, the great James Braddock. How you doing, Tony?
Good morning. Doing well, Aaron. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, man. We're rolling. Did you hear about the Imperial Butterfly? Were you listening?
I was. Yes. Very impressive.
Yeah, isn't that something? Boxing is coming a long way with all of these different kind of sciences. You know, it's always been in the game, so it's coming around. What kind of science did Braddock put down?
Say that again.
What kind of science did Braddock put down? You know, Braddock was a character, the Cinderella man and all of this. They made movies and everything about him. Just give us a little background on who James Braddock was.
James Walter Braddock was his birth name. He was born on June 7th, 1905. Some sources say he was born on June the 6th. Other sources say he was born on June the 8th, but several sources say it's June the 7th, so I'm going to go with June the 7th for his date of birth. With those other controversial dates out there, he passed away on November the 29th, 1974, at the young age of 69. Jim was born in Hell's Kitchen, New York, on West 48th Street. He was one of seven children being raised by his immigrant Irish parents, his mother Elizabeth O'Toole, and his father an Anglo-Irishman, James Braddock. James married Mace T. Fox in 1930. The couple had three children, two sons and a daughter. Their names were James, Howard, and Rose Marie. Braddock joined the Army in 1942, became a first lieutenant, served on the island of Saipan, where he trained enlisted men hand-to-hand combat.
I want to ask you, Tony, where did you get this name, Cinderella Man?
His manager dubbed that name to him after the win over Max Baer. He was doomed as a fighter. The poor guy. He was a hard luck fighter. His hands were his downfall. He kept breaking them, and you know he had. In fact, he was barred from fighting. New York barred him from fighting for a time before he fought for the heavyweight championship because of his hands being busted up and stuff. You know, and that I'm gonna get into that. You know, but a little bit later on. But he was a hard luck. He was a hard luck fighter. In his comeback, you know, he fought. He fought. In 1934, after the stock market fell and broke, and he was really down his luck, and he had to go to the Catholic Charities to get charity to, you know, to feed his family, which just tore Braddock up. He was such a proud man. It just ate him alive to have to go and ask for help and relief to, you know, so he could feed and take care of his family. And that was during the 29. He couldn't get a fight. He couldn't get a job. You know, just everything was going against him like it was most of the people in America at that time. But he got a break when they called him to fight Corn Griffin, and it was just supposed to be a stepping stone for Corn Griffin. And of course, he upset him in three rounds, TKO. Then he got a chance to fight John Henry Lewis. And again, it was just, they knew that there was no way Braddock's going to beat him, and Braddock beat him and won a 10-round decision. And then the third fight was Art Lenke. He won a 10-round decision. And that set him up for the heavyweight championship fight with Baer. And of course, that was he was a 10-1 underdog when he entered the ring for that fight, and nobody even dreamed that he could beat Bear. And
to me, the hungry fighter is always the best fighter. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And he was a hungry man. I'm telling you, he was not Jeffries. Let's see. He was a methodical and determined kind of a bulldog fighter, who mm-hmm. diligently went about his work in a methodical fashion. He wasn't really a flashy or particularly talented fighter. He was just willing and determined. You know, he had the heart of a fighter. You know, and that was his big success, I would say, Aaron. You know, as a prize fighter. You know, mm-hmm. he had a lot of heart. You know, there was no quit. You know, we just saw a fight here last week. You know, a man sit in a stool and quit because he hurt his hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
Braddock would no more do that than. I mean, you'd have to kill him. He wouldn't settle on his stool and quit. I mean, he had busted hands, broken hands, and he would complete fights with those hands busted up and broke. He was just a determined, tough, tough man.
They call that the honor tools and things. So you break your hand in the fight, you keep fighting, and you finish the fight, whether lose or draw. It's like one of these honor things. You know, guys get all busted up, man. They keep fighting. At the end of the fight, you know, they go, well, that guy knew he was in a hell of a fight, and people come up, patting him on the back. Man, oh, you went out of them. He said, but I lost. But, hey, look. People love when they see what's going on, but when you continue and you can apologize for it in the winner's circle. And I'll tell you, somebody, Tim Austin, got his jaw broken two places in the first round when he was fighting Mobile Boutilli, went on and fought the fight, eight rounds, ended up knocking the guy up to win his title. That's what we're talking about, and that's what you're talking about, Tony.
It is.
Hey, you know, just a quick aside, too. Don't forget Cotto in his last fight. He tore his shoulder up halfway through the fight, stuck it out, lost, but, you know, ended up getting surgery the next week. So just as recently as a couple weeks ago, we saw, you know, Cotto hang in there and fight the last six rounds or so with a bum shoulder.
You bet. You know, and, you know, there's no disgrace in losing a prize fight. You know, you're not disgraced or dishonored because you lose a prize fight. You know, I don't know where people get, you know, it takes a special kind of a man to step into an arena and step into the square circle in front of 40,000 people and have the chance of getting your butt whipped in front of all those people. You know, that takes a special kind of man that, you know, to be able to do that. Of course, you never step into the ring with the mindset you're going to lose, and we understand that. I mean, you know, you don't do that. When you step into that square circle, your mind is made up. You're winning that challenge of that evening, but somebody's got to lose. And it takes a special man, you know, to have that intestinal fortitude and the heart to step into a ring in front of all those people. And Braddock lost so many fights. I mean, in the 29 after the depression hit, I mean, he probably lost. I don't have his record in front of me, so I apologize if I'm incorrect in my numbers here. But he lost something like 16 of 20 fights. I mean, and that was before he got the break in 34, you know, fighting Griffiths and Henry Lewis, John Henry Lewis and Art Lenke. But and then he got his bid for the heavyweight championship. But he studied Bear. You know, tell me, Braddock's first real break came when he got the opportunity to fight Tommy Laughlin for the light heavyweight championships of the world. And he lost a hard-fought, heartbreaking 15-round bid of that for that light heavyweight championship. And, you know, and then he was just, you know, a hard luck man from that point on until he got his break in 34 and things turned around for him. But when he got his, but when, and Tommy Loughlin studied Braddock, you know, his style and his the way he stood, and kind of like Smelling studied Joe Louis, I think I see something, you know, and so that's how Loughlin beat Braddock. But
hello,
I'm here. You there? Hello.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But go ahead.
We're breaking up a little bit. I know that, and I don't know what's going on. But when he got in the ring to fight Bear, he studied Bear, and he knew in his heart that he could beat him if he could stay away from that right hand. And that's what he did, and he won a 15-round decision. After winning the championship, he didn't do a whole lot of fighting. He did a lot of exhibitions, traveling around the United States with what the heck's his name? Jack McCarthy. They toured for 2 years just doing exhibitions.
Yeah.
And
to follow up what you're saying, he was after Corbett and Jeffries, through that Great Depression. That's when he was fighting, and he was fighting for a little time, and he got hungry. He couldn't get a job and couldn't get no fights.
Right.
So, but he got an opportunity to fight because he was hungry, and he rose to the case and bounced.
He did.
So, his championship of the world, Tony, how long did it last? What did he have many title defenses? You know, was it 10 years, 3 years, 2 years? It was a short reign.
He was champion for 2 years, but, you know, he didn't fight for 2 years. You know, he did was exhibitions. There was a funny, now I don't quite understand what happened here. I know about it, but I don't understand. Maybe you can help me with this, you and Bob, you know, because I'd like to, you know, kind of get this squared away. Before the fight of Joe Louis, he was supposed to fight Max Smelling.
Right.
And he was going to get $25,000 to fight Smelling to defend his title.
Uh-huh.
And he had to cancel that fight because he injured his hand in training. Okay, well, we all know he had bad hands. Okay.
Yeah.
Braddock injured his hand, and he canceled the fight with Smelling. Okay, and I know that's correct. Okay. Okay, but here's where it gets funny, and I don't really know what instituted this. Braddock was prohibited from engaging into bouts by the New York State Athletics Commission. They forbidden Braddock from engaging into a bout of any length whatsoever against Joe Louis before he defends his title against Max Smelling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then they say, and again, I don't really know the particulars, and I can't find anything on this, kind of why I'm bringing it up. I find this kind of interesting, but I'm kind of goofy that way, you know. This history stuff I like when it comes to the boxing. But Braddock went ahead and signed for a fight with Joe Louis, even though the New York Athletic Commission told him it was mandatory that him to fight Max Smelling. But he could get $250,000 for fighting Louis, and you know, talk about a smart manager and trainer. Gout,
right.
is that how you pronounce Braddock's manager? Is it Gout? G-O-U-L-D. He worked a contract. He worked a contract with Louis's people, where Braddock, win, lose, or draw, would get 10% of Louis's purse for the next 10 years.
Yeah, that was some kind of deal that was cut with that, because you know, they felt that he was so much of an underdog, and that only way that Lewis would fight him was they put something crazy on the table.
He gained an extra $150,000, which, you know, that's what, back then, that's what, 4 or 5 million in today's, you know, market, I would assume. But, you know, that was, you know, but of course Lewis beat him, you know, and he was kind of done after that. You know, he didn't, you know, have any success as a fighter or anything after that. You know, he fought some notable men during his time, you know, Maxie Rosenbloom, John Henry Lewis, Corn Griffith, Tuffy Griffith, Yale Oakham, Tommy Farr, Ernie Sharp, who Bear killed in the ring, Art Linkley. You know, he was a talented man. You know, tough guy.
He went 8 hard, tough rounds with Joe Lewis. You know,
yes.
in that loss, what, he had a unanimous decision with Max Bear, right?
Yes,
I think, and
yes.
Art Lore had a unanimous decision. So, you know, not only being hungry when a guy goes the distance like that a lot in those big fights, but they were exciting fights. So he was a well-conditioned fighter. He was in shape.
They say, and again, this is rumor, of course, but they say that. He was having so much trouble before the Lewis fight that he was on a medication, and it kind of numbed his arm and his shoulder where he couldn't lift his hand up. So his left hand, you know, was just dead in that fight against.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that is actual fact or not, I'm not going to say. I wasn't at the fight. I wasn't there. These are just things that come out, you know, later in life, you know, as you hear things about different fights and things. But they say he was medicated because of pain of his shoulder and arthritis. He had really bad arthritis.
Yeah. But during that time, you know, during that era, Joe Lewis era, you know, Joe Lewis was mainly the big name during that era, because of his radio attraction, and TV was just coming into play. But a lot of those guys were in the military too. Wasn't Brad? He served in the military too. He's a military vet, right?
Army. Yeah, he was in the Army. He taught hand to hand. He was a lieutenant, and he taught hand to hand combat to the enlisted men. He was in the Army, but he dropped. You know, his name was James Walter. And he dropped the Walter for a fighting name. He fought under James J. Braddock because of two previous heavyweight champs, and he wanted to follow the pattern of James J. Corbett and the great James J. Jeffries. So that's how I came about becoming James J. Braddock. You know, his name's James Walter. So
okay. Now we understand it was his name out there. People start connecting the dots, you know, get you a little bit more popularity. You know,
yes.
He gets time with the former great champions who were very well named. So his name would come up on the forefront in the top while he was champion.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, that was a brilliant move on his part, you know, and he I'm going to use the word copy for lack of a better word, or I can't think of something else better to say, you know, but in copying and the namesakes, you know, it improved him a lot, you know, in popularity and in notoriety, you know. So yeah, it was a good move on his part, you know. But, you
yeah,
know, and that's,
hey,
you know, James J. Go ahead.
He worked it during a little bit like a horseman or something, to my understanding. And he worked in the shipyards when he could get work from time to time. Because during that time, the Depression, work was hard to find. So you had to go around and do little odd jobs and going to gym and trained, you know, working these odd jobs as a, you know, at a steel mill or, you know, stuff like that. But I believe he worked as a horseman, too.
He did, but you know, he was a longshoreman when he could get work. You know, he worked at a silk. He was a runner for a silk factory, and I'm not sure what that means. And he, a horseman, like you said, he just did all kinds of odd jobs. He was worked at a printing shop. You know, he did all kinds of. You know, he did what he could do. To, you know, to support his family, and he was not successful. And the Catholic Charities took care of his family. And after James became successful in the prize fight ring, he paid back every penny that was given him to help his family. And he supported the Catholic Charities because he appreciated them so much. And he made several donations through his life after boxing to support that Catholic Charity for what they did to him and for him and his family.
And when he fought for the title, he was a huge underdog.
10-1.
When he fought.
10-1 underdog. 10-1.
10-1.
Right, 10-1 underdog.
That's a huge number, and he rose to the occasion. You know, special. And America pulls for the underdog.
And thank God they do.
Nobody gets in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
bet.
So,
you know, and,
let's talk. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What'd you say, Tony?
You know,
let's sum this up and put it in today's place. And, you know, where's the figure out in this heavyweight picture?
Okay. He was inducted. He was not. Some argue that he cannot be listed among the great fighters. You know, some historians say, you know, he does deserve that be among the great fighters, but he certainly qualifies to be listed among them, in my opinion, the great men, due to the hardship he endured during the Depression. And during his career with the many breakage of his hand, he persevered to overcome, and in the process, I feel he became a much stronger and a better man, and a much better prize fighter because of that determination and will and the heart, intestinal fortitude, or however you want to put it. To continue and to keep a reason to the challenge and becoming the heavyweight champion of the world, the man that beat the man, the most coveted spot in the world at that time. And to me,
well,
that kind of wraps up James J. Braddock.
Yeah, well, Braddock, he's in the International Boxing Hall of Fame, right? In 2001, I think they inducted him in there. And
he's in the Ring Boxing Hall of Fame in 1964. They inducted him into the ring. That was Nat Fletcher's Hall of Fame in New York. He's in the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. He was inducted in that in 1969. He was inducted into the World Boxing Hall of Fame in 1989 and the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 2001. So he's well recognized in the boxing community.
In New Jersey, I think the Hudson County Park in North Bergen, New Jersey, they have that park is named in his honor.
Yes,
it is.
Yes.
Yeah,
his granddaughter played in the Cinderella Man, the movie.
Right.
She played the girl next door neighbor.
That was in 2005, I believe.
You know, I don't
and
remember.
And I think he might have been a poor man, but the Cinderella Man, that grows over $110
million,
I think.
$108
million. Wow.
Ron Howard directed that. The movie, wow. The Cinderella Man, was directed by Ron Howard, yeah. Yeah, Russell Crowe played a good part in that. And Joe Ranger, however you say her name, you know, played Braddock's wife in the movie, and his granddaughter played the next-door neighbor, the girl's next-door neighbor. So, you know, yeah, it was an interesting time in boxing when Braddock was fighting, you know, and it was a tough time. And, you know, only the best rise to the top, and he was always the underdog. No one, he was, in every fight, he was always the underdog. And so many times he failed, but so many times he rose to the occasion and became victorious, and it paid off for him. You know, he was a great man. And that's James J.
Yeah,
Braddock, my friend.
Okay, Bob. In closing, what do you want to say about the whole day, the boxing news, James Braddock and the Imperial Butterfly.
Imperial Butterfly. Well, it was great hearing the Imperial Butterfly, and Tony is always good. But Aaron, hey, we should give the people like a website address. How about an email in case anybody wants to answer that question that Tony was asking there? You know, about that whole thing with the fight. Get some comments on that. We can go to the World Boxing Review. Go to the page. I mean, we don't have the page up yet, folks. That's going to be coming real soon. But you can still email us.
Yeah.
You have that email address, Andy?
The World Boxing Review at gmail.com.
Gmail.
Yeah.
The World Boxing Review at gmail.com. That's REVIEW2, spelled the right way. Then put the in there, THD. So the World Boxing Review at gmail.com. We love to hear from you because we got some good stuff happening in 2018 ourselves, Aaron. Rock and roll.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, look, in closing, we got some audio, video stuff for all of us, and we're going to be seeing not only just on the radio podcast, you're going to be seeing podcasts. You're going to see us on video, too, for the up-and-coming year in 2018. We got a lot of things on the move, a lot of things we're working for, and we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review, our historian, Tony Trim, and our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, and I'm Aaron Snowell, and we'll see you next Saturday from 11 to 12. Thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show.
Very good.